Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to a couple of All Elite Garys. This time we're going to take you through every single CM Punk AEW match so far, just in case he never returns, because as we're sat here, the date for us currently is the 14th of September. He's been suspended, we think, although we're not too sure. So what's going to happen? We have no idea. Owen Mawson, not Sam, hit the intro, please. Twenty-three matches Phillip Brooks has had in AEW, and we are here to put them all in a tier list ranging from the best to lovely, 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 to middle of the road, all right, to just about bearable, and then finally you want to avoid that there bin. And we're kicking things off.
There's more matches than I thought.
Yeah, so same here. Some of them are very inconsequential. Mm. Some of them are massive.
Yeah.
We'll find that out now, because we're going to go through things chronologically. We're kicking things off, obviously, All Out 2021, Punk's first match in 7 years. The long trunks are there. Punk proved in the opening stages of this match, because I like the story, it was all just about proving CM Punk can still do the wrestling once again, and he did that. Then he allowed Darby Allin to do his big bumps and whatnot. Any overriding memories from the All Out match there against Darby Allin?
Punk telling everyone afterwards he still got it, you must have forgot.
And
just that it was a really nice match, and I felt like a fraud of a wrestling fan, because I had no idea that it was so heavily based on the Bret Hart 1-2-3 kid match.
Yeah, that was lots of references in there. There was one bit where Punk did a GTS to Darby Allin and he falls through the ropes. Because a lot of people were thinking, oh, Punk's just beating all these young lads and whatnot. But in the early stages, at least, when he was doing this, he was always putting them over and making them look very good. Mm. So he does that GTS, Darby falls through the ropes, and Punk's like, quick, ref, count him out, because I can't be fighting him anymore.
He's
little
too dangerous.
Scary man. Punk sitting up like the Undertaker to escape a coffin drop was a gnarly cool moment. So as I said, yeah, just Punk getting to prove he could still do all of the fundamentals. He put the fun back in fundamentals in this match here, and it was just a good match.
Is it too early? Is this the best here? Is it too early for that?
I really enjoyed it.
I thought it was fantastic.
For a first match back in 7 years, and against someone like Darby, who was getting the rub, you know, getting CM Punk's first match back in wrestling in 7 years, I think it goes in the best.
I think it goes in the best as well, because it wasn't just about the quality of the match, which was really good. Certainly top two tiers, but what pushes it into the best was the sense of occasion as well. This is his first match back.
Yeah, and it had everything. Did all of its business very well. Made Punk look good, made Darby look good. All of the good things.
Yes.
Then we move on to Powerhouse Hobbs on AEW Rampage, number 7. Or was it number 8? I can't quite remember. Grand Slam it was anyway. This was the match that was set up after Hobbs put Punk through the announce table in devastating fashion. The Send Hook meme was born out of that angle. This match, obviously, because Powerhouse is a big, strong boy, CM Punk starts the match at 1,000 miles an hour because he wants to get rid of the big man very quickly. He tries to go for a GTS very quickly, and it just doesn't quite work, and then it sort of builds to there to where, once again, CM Punk makes a young whippersnapper, relatively speaking, like Powerhouse Hobbs look very, very good, because Hobbs just beat him down for ages.
Yeah, and I think by this point, Punk was already trying to show off. He's going, I can fight the small man, now I'm fighting a much bigger man. Mm. Look how I've adapted my game for this.
And it had Hook getting involved as well. Hook was causing all sorts of distractions on the ring apron, which allowed Hobbs to get on top. Hobbs was doing big moves, like big cross bodies and stuff, where Punk's on the ropes and he slides. That thing where Punk Hobbs on the ropes, Punk slides up his back, but then like down the back of his head and down to the floor, that sort of thing. Mm. It looked devastating, so it did, but it also looked very, very good as well. Punk survived a scary spot where he was going for Hurricane Rana off the top rope, but he sort of slips and he lands on his head, but he manages to get the win after a little crash between Hobbs and Hook, which sort of kept Hobbs looking kind of strong because of the malfunction at the junction there. But this is where we're as well, where we'll learn that CM Punk is going to be a full-time guy and not just someone who comes back every sort of 6 months for a big showcase match. So once again, this in terms of business did everything it needed to do. Hobbs looking good, Punk looking good, but in a different way to Darby. Hook was getting involved.
It wasn't quite as accomplished a match as the Derby one for me, but I agree it did all of the business that it needed to. I think it's lovely, lovely.
I think it's a tear down, But it's another good start from CM Punk in AEW. Then we move on to Daniel Garcia. 14.
It's just so foreboding, isn't it? It's a great start.
That's what we're going to get in there, because it has all gone sour, hasn't it? Anyway, CM Punk then takes on Daniel Garcia on Rampage. Number 10, 14 minutes and 5 seconds this match was. Once again, we've seen Punk take on a little guy, then we've seen Punk take on a big guy, then we've seen Punk in this match take on a technical guy. This is where the match, where all the sort of the footwork, all the submission holds and the strikes and whatnot, this is what came to the fore. Punk got the win with the Anaconda Vice for the first time in AEW in this match, and he did a bloody Pepsi twist. But once again, he's doing lots of selling and storytelling. He was selling the leg all the way through the match. Garcia picked up that body part apart like a good old professional wrestling man would do. Then instead of doing what he had been doing, Punk started to quicken the pace. And then despite the hurt limb, he just won. He told the story, but then was just like, and then quickened the pace at the end to get the big win.
This one for me is on a similar level to the Hobbs match, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
It did its job. Questions starting to creep in, I remember, around this stage. Is Punk going to put anyone over? But he's in context at the time, it was the biggest thing around. He'd just come back to wrestling. He wasn't going to lose any time early on.
Yeah.
I think even sharing the ring with these younger guys was giving them a bit of a rub.
It was a no-win situation for the people who were like, oh, is he just going to beat all these young whippersnappers who are the future of the business? Because obviously you can't have Punk lose on a random Rampage to someone like, at the time, Garcia. Mm. Maybe you could have him lose to Garcia now after everything that's gone on. But it's just the way Garcia wore him down and then Punk just came back. There was a big thing off the top rope, then a pile driver, then the vice. So just sort of like a bit of a smash and grab win. I like the way Punk was doing things at the start, because he wasn't going to lose, but the way he was winning, it was making everyone else look good as well.
It was all logical. Yeah. I think it's lovely as well.
Yeah.
There we go.
I would argue it's a bit better than the Hobbs one.
I would argue that as well.
Oh, lovely. Then we go on to a match versus Matt Sydal, AEW Rampage number 11. Sydal is going 200 miles an hour at the start because he can, and Punk can't in comparison to Matt Sydal. Both men are on the top rope and they fall out the ring to the floor. It was absolutely devastating to watch. Punk gets one neck breaker in, but then Sydal goes back on the attack, and they sat there thinking, Punk's done one move in like 8 or 9 minutes here, and Sydal is just wrestling rings around him. Could he be beating CM Punk in this match at Rampage? Could he do it? No. Okay. Sydal escapes Punk's finishes. He hits a lightning spiral, which I didn't realise was the name of his finishing maneuver.
Okay.
And it looks like it's over, but it's not quite. And then Punk basically just fights back one GTS later, and it's over.
Oh, he's like John Cena, isn't he?
Yeah, just a bit. He has turned into the Thing. But was that on purpose? Because we're building towards the Eddie Kingston feud here. So was this building like, oh, he's become the thing he hated back in the day?
I don't think they would have quite thought that in the structure of these matches. Well, that's at least my interpretation of it.
Any interpretation.
I just think it was more about Punk being older and he's lost a step and he needs to really pull it out of the bag against these younger or more high-flying or more technical guys.
Yeah, because that was the good thing as well, because despite the fact Matt Sydal is 55, 56 years of age at this point, he once again, CM Punk made his opponent look very good. In defeat, he made himself look more vulnerable than he had done in any of the other matches, which I can see why people would take as a slight on someone like Powerhouse Hobbs, who in comparison to Matt Sydal should be maybe dominating someone like CM Punk a bit more. But this match was a lot better than it had any right to be, because heading in, you're thinking about what Matt Sydal had done up until, what date was it? I've got the dates written down here. Last year. Are you thinking he hasn't done anything, so this is just going to be a squash match? But it wasn't, and it was just a nice story told once again, I thought.
This is the first one for me that might dip into all right, but I think it's got enough about it to be in lovely still. It was a good match.
Oh, yes.
Yes, okay.
I'll go all right.
You go all right?
It's either or, top of all right, bottom of lovely, I'm fine with, because Sydal was very good in this match.
The fact that he made him look so good, I'll stick that in all right, in lovely as well. But now I'm worried we're making this too top-heavy.
No.
There's worse things to come.
It was a fantastic start, man. Yeah. And then we get on to a really inconsequential match, which was CM Punk against Robert Fishington.
Oh, no.
12 minutes and 58 seconds on Dynamite. No. A match that looks, in hindsight now, as we're sat here on the 14th of September. And all of the headlines Bobby Fish has made over the past couple of weeks, it looks really different in comparison to what it looked like at the time. Because at the time, you're thinking, bloody hell, Bobby Fish is on this string of really good matches in AEW when they had no right to be. Believe me, that was what was happening. But this one
on
was
Rampage
like...
Rampage and stuff, he was tearing it up,
just having
he?
These barn burners, doing all these big gnarly moves that, what he said to be on Straight to Hell, he wasn't allowed to do in NXT because he was told to be the background guy in the Undisputed Era. But this one was just, I've written down a proper cockfight. You know what I mean? Qu'est-ce que c'est?
Turns out because they really hate each other.
Yeah. Punk was doing all of his big moves like topes and stuff off the top, which allows Bobby to capitalise and work the leg once again. Punk's leg getting worked on once again. Fish gets out of a GTS attempt, but then eats one and loses. But then he kicks out at either 2.99 or maybe 3.1.
I really think he kicks out. I think he kicks out just before 3.
So do I, looking back at it as well. So once, yeah, that's why, well, Fish hated Punk. Fish hates how Punk does all the MMA-inspired stuff. So Fish did this, and then Punk didn't like Fish off the back of this. That's what I've learned from all the headlines.
It was a similar critique, Bobby Fish. It reminded me of when you hear people talking about the heat that Goldberg gets or got back in the day. Because he, even though he's a wrestler and an American football guy, background guy, he dressed like UFC Ken Shamrock. He had the gloves and the little biker shorts and stuff, and he was trying to pretend to be a legit martial artist. And that's Bobby Fish's issue with CM Punk.
It depends how much you want to look into the finish, I think, which scuppers the sort of ranking of this match.
The finish definitely effective for me.
Yeah.
And I think that Fish's explanation, or no, he didn't really explain it, did he? But I think the implication was that Punk took too long to cover him. So Fish thought, well, I'll almost kick out of this. But the reason Punk took too long to cover him is because he was selling the damage that Bobby had done to his leg.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a catch-22 situation there.
But I think the action up until the finish was really, really good. Go back and watch it.
I think that it has to be knocked down to it all right, then
I'm
maybe.
Fine with that.
Yeah, because the finish does affect it, definitely,
yeah,
I think.
Big time. But anyway, Bobby Fish was doing well.
Big time.
Big time. Yes, big time. I'm speaking like Nathan Fraser now, by NXT. And then we move on to a huge match at Full Gear, 2021, against Edward Kingston, which only went 11 minutes and 7 seconds according to Cage Match, which, of course, is a fantastic source for all your professional wrestling needs. Shades of Grey from Punk in the first time in AEW in the build to this match, because this is, of course, where Punk was sort of body shaming Eddie Kingston and saying his belly meant he couldn't realise his potential in AEW. Kingston was lambasting the way Punk was going on backstage, calling him Two-Faced in Ring of Honor and stuff like that. So this was a nice new shade for CM Punk.
You've always been this way. You're not a good guy.
It was interesting how they had, because obviously Kingston at that time was, you know, one of the biggest baby faces in the company, taking on Punk, one of the biggest baby faces in the company. Something had to give, and it turned out Punk looking like a bit of a dick in one of these, because it's happened a few times now where someone's gone, you're an arsehole, you, we don't like you here. And this was sort of Eddie Kingston doing that as well here.
I really like AEW's decision not to turn Kingston heel for this feud, because I think they knew the fans would still cheer him. And it's crazy to think that Eddie Kingston still got cheered against CM Punk making his return after so many years. So I think it speaks to how popular Eddie Kingston was as well. Or is still enduringly popular.
Because it was also fantastic, because this is where we really got hammered home that Punk had become the thing he hated back in the day. He had become which sporting franchise there?
The New York Yankees.
Indeed, because that's what he wanted to hate John Cena for being back in back in 2011, wasn't it? So he'd become that. Eddie Kingston was now the sort of de facto Punk of the feud. And he sort of hammered this home during this match because he did 4 of the 5 moves of Doom, but then Kingston got out of the 5-knuckle shuffle. Eddie Kingston knocked Punk out with the Hurricane before the bell even rang, and the crowd, as Jack said there, were going absolutely radio rental for Eddie Kingston. Then the pace quickened when the match actually started, because it just turned into a proper, like, sluggers brawl, another cockfight sort of thing. Punk was bleeding lots. Eddie rubbed that blood into his own head because wrestlers like doing that sort of thing. I've written down here a breathless encounter which caused both men to sort of collapse while on the middle rope, which was a really nice story being told there, because, you know, while they are getting on a bit, they are still in fantastic shape, but, you know, getting all the slugging and whatnot was just knocking them out, knocking them for 6. Eddie goes for one more Hurricane, but Punk gets out of it and he hits a GTS for the win. Then obviously after the bell, Eddie refuses to shake Punk's hand, but I've written down here just what a fight, another different shade of a match for CM Punk in AEW.
I think this might be the most unique match of all the matches that he's had, apart from maybe one we'll get to later on, but I really, really enjoy this. I think it's a no-brainer, Ross.
Top tier.
In the top tier.
No doubt. Big
which
time.
Which will sort the order of the top tier, obviously, at the end.
We'll find out which has been Punk's best match in the opinion of Jack the Jobber at the end of this video. Number 7, hometown hero CM Punk defeats QT Marshall with Aaron Solo.
I can't believe he did it.
And Nick Camarado in his corner. Well, they got sent to the back because of shenanigans, which meant that Punk was in a straight-up singles match now. And I mention that because it's crucial, because Punk in a straight-up singles match with QT Marshall went 11 minutes and 8 seconds. Dynamite Thanksgiving edition.
Do you know if this match came before or after Big Show squashed QT Marshall?
Well, I think that was on Full Gear, was it not?
Oh, well then, why is he then going however long with CM Punk?
Let me just check that.
Competitive match.
Speak amongst yourself for a second. QT Marshall.
This is a good point to clarify. We're not doubting the ability and the professionalism of QT Marshall. He can go in there and have an acceptable match or better with anyone. He's a really valuable asset to AEW in that regard. But just in terms of the kayfabe QT Marshall, I think we're being critical that...
Oh no, All Out 2021, is that right?
Oh, so it was still after the Big Show.
Yeah, All Out, yeah. 50 September 2021. Well, this is what I mean.
I'm not doubting QT Marshall's ability as a pro wrestler, but kayfabe, the character QT Marshall...
There's no consistency, is there?
No, not at all.
1 second he's getting spaffed on, another second he's taking CM Punk within the first few months of his run in AEW to 11 minutes and 8 seconds with no help from his factory friends.
And no.
This, of course, was in the midst of the MJF feud, which was kicked off when Maxwell said no one on his level. Out comes Punk to confront him, and then he refuses to shake the hand of MJF just 3 days after Eddie refused to shake his hand. Oh, it's all handshakes and hand grenades here, as Corey Graves likes to say. A big elbow and the GTS for a win. But of course, we're asking, why did this last so long? Was it because they wanted to give the hometown their money's worth? That's what I've written down here.
That would make sense. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, because they just had the massive and brilliant promo segment I've written down here, they didn't have to do that because just before this match, they had the brilliant promo segment with Punk and MJF, where MJF said that despite being straight edge, Punk still looks like a drug addict. MJF would drop Punk quicker than his UFC career, and then Punk calls him a less famous Miz. So they had that. So giving the money's worth, maybe has no leg to stand on. It was a fine match, but again, it's just that...
You can say he looks like a drug addict, and you can laugh at his UFC career, but don't you dare make a veiled reference to a very obscure rumour going around, or he will... try to blackball you from this industry. Allegedly.
Well, I guess he did it. I assume Maxwell Jacob Friedman cleared that with Punk backstage, whereas someone went into business for themselves, maybe. I don't know. But this is bearable. Yeah,
because it wasn't a bad match at all, but it just made no sense.
Yeah, it's like having, maybe not Roman Reigns, but maybe someone like a Kevin Owens getting taken to a long match by, who is the biggest jobber in the... It's just Heath Slater, isn't it? He's just the answer for all the job
I guess
needs.
So, yeah.
Yeah, weird. Anyway, CM Punk then takes on Lee Moriarty, AEW Dynamite number 113 for those wanting to go back and watch it. 10 minutes and 24 seconds. MJF is on the call for this one. He says that CM stands for cooking meth because Punk looks like he does the drugs. Technical wrestling masterclass I've written down here for this one. Punk going for a Frankensteiner because he couldn't remember the Hobbs one because of the drugs clearly hampering his memory. Lee Moriarty, that Sherlock Holmes man himself. I don't know what the reference is.
Yeah, Moriarty's the name of the villain in Sherlock Holmes.
He was being a villain here because he did a Pepsi twist to CM Punk. He's a saucy man. The pair trade roll-ups because they have watched the wrestling before. Punk then goes for a GTS, and that's what wins the match. Then after the match, MJF cuts the promo on Punk, where he claims he's all good. All he's good for is trying to get into the pants of Britt Baker.
That was a perfectly timed insult because Punk had mentioned Britt Baker favourably in, I think, two promos. If he'd just done it in one, it would have been like, is he? But because he did it twice, I remember thinking, he's got him. He's got him there with that one.
Yeah. But this was, for just a 10-minute match on a throwaway Dynamite, was it Dynamite Rampage?
It
was really good.
Yeah.
I think lovely tier, maybe not the best tier.
I would agree, lovely tier as well.
But the audacity of Moriarty doing a Pepsi twist to CM Punk TV like that. My goodness, what a guy. Then we go on to the tag. This is wonderful. There's CM Punk, Darby Allin and Sting defeating the pinnacle team of Cash Wheeler, Dax Harwood and MJF. This goes nearly 25 minutes on Dynamite. On the holiday edition just before Christmas of 2021. Obviously the face paint from Sting with the CM Punk taped fists. Punk doing the surface Sting face paint. Darby's. What was Darby's? I've gone blank. It's not in the picture.
I reckon it's Darby had a Sting one as well.
Yeah. The first time Punk and MJF were involved in a match together in the midst of their feud, this was this match here. It was just a lovely babyface Christmas wrapped win for the babyfaces, yes. Because it was Christmas. With MJF not wanting any part of Punk, avoiding him at all costs for large parts of the match, and then he wanted to avoid him so much he ran away into the crowd. At one point, Darby gets beaten down by the heels because this time FTR was still heels. Which is a weird thing to fathom, because they are so popular, as we're sat here in September 2022. And because this show was in Greensboro, which was WCW territory, this is where Sting was basically the star of the match. Darby got beat down a lot. Punk was sort of preoccupied with MJF, so Sting comes in for the hot tag and just spaps in the faces of FTR and MJF for a period as well. Punk was about to do a GTS on MJF before Dax Harwood sacrifices himself. Then he gets hit with a GTS and a Scorpion Death Drop and a coffin drop for the win.
Oh.
While Punk was the main story for this match, he wasn't like the main bit of the action. It was all about Sting because we're back in WCW and it's Christmas. And much like Die Hard, Sting is Christmas.
I think that this one is probably either top of lovely or in the best, but not necessarily because of Punk. As you've said, he wasn't the focal point of the match. But that doesn't mean... Does that affect where it goes?
I was going to say, because
is?
We are judging this on CM Punk's matches, he didn't really do too much in the match. While the story was him and MJF, they were sort of on the periphery for this one.
But then Adam Pacitti was in that Royal Rumble, which was a great Rumble. Does that mean Adam Pacitti's had a really good Royal Rumble? It does. I don't think you can... I don't think
five
you can question
star
that.
Adam Pacitti.
I'm torn
five-star Lars, isn't it?
It is. I think that it's not quite up to the calibre of the ones in the best. So I might put it top of lovely.
I think it's in lovely, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a nice Christmassy match. Yeah. Then we go on to the match against Wardlow at the start of 2022, I believe, on Dynamite. This is where Wardlow, once again, just looks very good in this match against CM Punk. He just spaffs all over Punk so much that Punk needs to go to the outside and have a little breather on the floor. Then after reversing some big Punk offense and Punk flipping off MJF at ringside, several power bombs are done by Wardlow. It looks like he's got the match won. Because he does one through the announce table as well, then rolls Punk back into the ring. But then MJF just gets on the apron, and just starts telling Wardlow to do things he didn't need to do because the match is already won. This is, of course, when MJF and Wardlow are building up their big breakup. The start of the downfall for Wardlow, this wasn't the match because MJF stuck his nose in. What am I doing here? MJF loses it with Wardlow, and this is where the end of their relationship, as I said, continues to be teased. Diesel versus Bret Hart vibes here because Punk, after getting beaten up so much, just as a roll-up and wins. He steals it at the last possible moment.
But I prefer Diesel versus Bret Hart, Ross.
Yes.
I think this match maybe just would have been one of those matches that didn't have to be written into the storyline. Mm. I don't think it helped Wardlow. It made him look silly. It made MJF look silly as well. And I think that this was the one for me where I thought they've had to really find a way for Punk not to lose here. And it didn't sit that well with me. So
I didn't mind it, mate. There were all these little references from MJF that he was just being horrible to Wardlow, and it was just getting to that breaking point. It was getting, you know, the fans were gagging for Batista to go.
It did further that purpose, yeah.
So it was like we're getting the fans gagging for Wardlow to turn on MJF here. So I didn't mind it personally, but I can see your point of view.
That's a good point as well. So I think maybe all right then.
Yeah, I'll go for all right, because it was basically a squash match until the finish, and then it wasn't. And then CM Punk just stole one, and then we get on to the best match CM Punk has ever had in AEW.
Okay.
CM Punk versus Sean Spears. This is because Sean was the one who had to calm things down because he was in the pinnacle back then between Wardlow and MJF.
He was the accountability buddy.
He was the accountability buddy. He was the one telling Wardlow to calm down, son. Calm down. 12 seconds this match goes for on Dynamite. Spears, because they built this up, I thought, really well at the time, because Spears got an impressive win against Andrew Everett.
He did.
The Giant.
Yes.
On Rampage before this Dynamite. He gets a massive entrance for this match. You're thinking, no, surely not. This is going to be another QT Marshall special. 10 minutes of absolute flying offense. But then MJF's like, at the start of this Dynamite here, he's like, Spears is going to beat you, Punk. He's going to beat you. He's been deadly serious. No irony whatsoever. One GTS is all it took. MJF's down the ring after the bell, looking like he's going to attack Punk, but Punk catches him and then steals his scarf as we're continuing to build that feud wonderfully at this stage. This served its purpose.
Yes.
I don't know where we put it in a tier.
Usually I'd think we'd put a squash match maybe in bearable just because it's so short. But this one was presented perfectly.
So it's in the best then?
No. But it's in all right. Definitely, at a minimum.
Yeah,
all right. Yeah.
It sort of built to a nice... It was like... Stranger Things when the Mind Flayer is attacking them and then Dusty Bun and Susie Poo start singing Never Ending Story.
Yeah,
that sort of build. Exactly,
it reminded me of that.
Just exactly the same thing, yeah. Sean Spears loves Broadway, of course, as we learned at Stadium Stampede, match there. Number 12, CM Punk's 12th match in AEW, MJF defeats CM Punk, 38 minutes and 9 seconds. Punk
in Chicago.
In Chicago, yeah. He'd been undefeated for the first 6 months of his AEW run. And as Jack said, this was in his hometown. And Punk, MJF just didn't win once. He won twice on the night. Punk on the offensive early on before MJF gets a beat down on Punk. And then Punk fights back and then gets the crowd involved because they're slapping MJF in the tits and whatnot. The fans are, because he's holding them, doing that sort of thing. It's all good babyface stuff. MJF is doing some good sensual healing, I've written down here. Yeah. Like distracting the ref and then getting some tape and choking CM Punk with it. And then that sort of allows him to put a sleeper on. And that's how we do the arm thing. 1, 2, 3. The arm goes down and the match is over. But then Bryce is like, what's that on the floor there, Maxwell?
Bryce is really switched on.
That I didn't see with my own eyes. As we all know, professional referees just call what they see, but not Bryce Remsburg. No, no, no. He called this one, and then we had to restart the match again because obviously Bryce worked out that MJF used the tape, and he can't be doing that in CM Punk's hometown of Chicago. So the match was restarted again, and you're thinking to yourself, obviously, because CM Punk is the hometown hero, he's just going to beat MJF up really quickly, end the match, and then get the win back. But no, he went for a roll up. That didn't work. He then hurt his knee by being overzealous as the crowd were going, go on CM, you can do it. And then of course MJF fought back and worked on that hurt leg. Then they bit each other, and then Punk did a Pepsi plunge. MJF rolls out the ring. Wardlow comes down, step over MJF body for a stare down with Punk. But this is where some wonderful wizardry happens, because on the replays after the final bell, when MJF beats him for a second time, we see a reverse angle. And while Wardlow and Punk are doing that stare down, Wardlow, because he's obviously being paid by MJF at this point, slips in the dynamite ring behind his back. Wonderful little thing there. And then we sort of just get MJF back in the ring, and ha-ha! Then it's over again.
Now, some people might say this was overbooked. I would disagree, because I thought it all served its purpose. I loved the non-Dusty finish that you thought was going to be a Dusty finish. And not like Dusty and Susie and not that.
Not Dusty Bond, no.
And also, I thought it was a really bold and brave booking decision to have him lose in Chicago. And I think it paid off.
Yeah, big time. CM Punk, I guess when you... I don't know what to make about any of this, but it's clear that CM Punk and MJF were singing from the same hymn sheet here, and they were making good stories all
doing
the
good
time.
Business.
Doing good business. And then CM Punk and John Moxley...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Defeat FTR on Dynamite. This is where, to get another match with MJF after what we just spoke about there, Punk had to defeat FTR in a tag team match, but his partners couldn't be Sting or Darby Allin, so Punk picks Moxley, who Punk had spoken about so glowingly after Moxley obviously had to take his break from the business. Cash and Dax use tag team wrestling to start because they are a proper tag team, whereas the other two aren't, and they're doing really well with it. The babyfaces then fight back, but then the heels distract the referee and start working a body part because they are from the 1980s. 80s. Moxley then starts going bananas for a bit before Punk and Moxley hit a doomsday device, as it was clear in this match here they were just having some fun, weren't
they?
A couple of wrestling lads having some fun with some more wrestling lads. A big rig on Punk. Mox is there to break up the fall. Tully Blanchard, who of course was still the manager of FTR at this time, he takes a GTS from Punk for good measure and sold it wonderfully well despite being 97 years of age. Punk and Mox hit their finishes at the same time for a lovely win. Once again, the story is about Punk, but Mox is in there doing all the work. So obviously Punk had to win this match to get the match with MJF, but Moxley was just going like, oh, I'm back now. I'm looking 10 years younger than I did a few months ago. I'm just going to show everybody I can still do what I do best.
I think tonally, it is very similar to the one with Sting and Darby, because it's not all about Punk. It's more of just a fun... You know the good guys are going to win, but it doesn't affect my enjoyment of the match. Mm. I think it was really good. I'm putting it in a similar place to that Darby and Sting one, I think.
Yeah, a feel-good win.
Yes.
But I had a nice story as well with the tag team wrestlers doing some good tag team stuff, and then the babyface is going, and then fighting back. AEW Revolution 2022 dog collar match. CM Punk defeats MJF in 26 minutes and 48 seconds. Be my Valentine there, Maxwell, because of Valentine's Day, but also Greg the Hammer and his penchant for dogs. We got the origin story of MJF being a dick in the midst of this feud, and it was all because CM Punk turned his back on the pro wrestling business. So MJF says, I will become a wrestler and an arsehole just to spite CM Punk. MJF getting Punk in the dog collar on the go-home show for this match was amazing. I'd have to mention that because it was so good. And then we get the Ring of Honor Punk entrance, which upset everybody in the world because how could you know that was his theme? But yeah, he got that because obviously in the weeks, well, the week before this pay-per-view, Tony Khan announced that Ring of Honor had been purchased by him, and obviously Punk's history with the dog collar with Raven in Ring of Honor and what not.
And MJF stole Cult of Personality for that match.
Oh, yes.
So Punk went, well, I've got my emo song from the 2000s. Just you wave.
A lovely start in this match with Punk pissing on MJF as he's like, oh, please leave me alone. So Punk just batters him, and then MJF batters him for a bit in the head with a chain, which was lovely to see. And I'm glad Punk was wearing white shorts for this match because the blood went everywhere, and as it always does when you're wearing white, it just looks good, doesn't it?
Yes.
Looks like a horror film. And they just beat each other up for a long time. Brutal moments included MJF raking his nails through Punk's like gash on his head in the midst of a GTS attempt. Excuse me, that MJF was doing what he did with the tape in the first match, but with a chain. Nice little bit of storytelling there. Sequential, logical, linear. Then we get a bit of a submission map-based stuff. This match had everything. Like, we're getting trading submission holds and whatnot. We're outside the ring using the steps. Then we're back in the ring because he's lost so much blood. Punk can't quite hit the finisher. He's fallen down with MJF in the GTS position. The drama was palpable. We get a tombstone on the... There's lots of tombstones in AEW, isn't there?
There actually is,
A tombstone on the apron from Punk to MJF. And then we get the thumbtacks in the ring because it looks like Punk is going to use them. But no, MJF does a big superplex into them instead. Brutal stuff. And then, of course, we get the closing angle of the match, which is Wardlow coming down to the ring. MJF's like, give me the diamond ring to have me win the same time I did for the second time in the first match. And Wardlow's like, oh, I can't find it. Where is it? MJF then turns his back to fight Punk some more. Then Wardlow's like, oh, there it is. He sees the Punk's on top. He leaves it on the apron. Punk picks it up and then uses it to win the match. A nice bit of tit for tat there for CM Punk.
It's an easy, the best tier for
it's
me.
An easy one,
not just for the match, but I thought the feud and the build was excellent as well. Mm. So I'm putting that in the best.
It was all going so bloody well
Punk's
at this point, wasn't it?
Last great AEW match. Oh, I don't know. We'll find out.
We'll find out, won't we? Yeah. Then he has that match against Dax Harwood. So maybe Jack.
Oh, maybe not. Oh,
there.
Hang on.
And a masturbatory Bret Hart affair. 12 minutes and 51 seconds. Just a straight up professional wrestler match. Each man systematically trying to take down the other person. Body part by body part. CM Punk was working Dax's arm. Dax was working Punk's neck made of sand. The Ass Boys are at ringside, which distracts Harwood at times. He misses a diving headbutt off the top, otherwise he would have hit it if it wasn't for those damn Ass Boys. Then he fought back and started to dominate Punk for a long time. He does a big superplex. Both men go over the top with that suplex spot where one guy goes over, the other guy follows him because they don't let go.
Scary spot.
Yeah, horrible. There's a lot to that. There's a lot to them in AEW as well, isn't there? Then we get a sharpshooter on Punk from Dax Harwood. Punk's in the got the Anaconda Vice then on Dax. Then Punk goes for a GTS, but that doesn't work. Another sharpshooter from Dax is then put on, but then eventually Punk wins by reversing that into the Anaconda Vice, and then for the first time ever in AEW history, Punk does that because he's either like really hungry or he wants the world title. Well, just a really good
I'm
match.
Really relieved that the Ass Boys were involved in this, because that's what I was worried this match was going to miss. It was a really good match, but does it belong at the top of lovely, or does it belong in the best?
I would argue bottom of the best.
Bottom of the best.
That was one of my big arguments for making Dax Harwood the wrestler of the year.
Of course.
For the Cultaholic Wrestling Podcast, Culties, which he won, by the way.
He did win from a fan vote on patreon.com/cultaholic. Go on then. I'll put it in the best. It was very good.
It was very good.
It wasn't as epic as the other ones, but that's all right.
But it was the footwork, Jack, you see. Yes. It was the footwork. It was the so fundamentals pure. On show. It was
so
lovely.
Technical.
CM Punk then defeats Max Caster, not his brother, Matt Caster, in 7 minutes, 9 seconds on Dynamite. This is the opening match of the night on that particular night, and it just felt like the opening match of the night.
I don't remember this one.
Yeah, it wasn't one of those big, like, where they have, like, you know, Hangman and Danielson open a big card, and it's one of those barn burners. This was just like, oh, this is the opening match of the night. Let's just have a nice wrestling match, and then just move on and do some bigger stuff later on. Caster is having a competitive match, but then Bowens gets involved on the outside to help turn the tide and just help Caster get on top a lot more. Punk then wins with a brutal pile driver after a little bit of a struggle. There was a little bit of a false start, then he just did it good and proper, and he transfers that into the Anaconda Vice, I think, as well. Lots of mentions about going for the world title by this point, because he's ranked. I think this was just him like racking up the ranking points to get him at the top of the ranking to make that eventual match have some credence to it. And then after the bell, Punk cuts a promo saying he'll have lots more grey hairs than he already does. He has lots of grey hairs in his beard. Then he'll have more scars than he already does in his head and whatnot. Whether it's Cole or Hangman, because that was the match at the time for the next pay-per-view, he's going to be world champion. I think this is the very definition of towards the old top of all right here.
Top of all right?
Yeah.
It was all right. Yeah. I'll put it like that was right there.
It was all right for what it was. Because I guess this was like Caster's... Was it his first big like singles match against a proper big name?
I don't feel qualified to really argue because I don't really remember it at all. And I love Max Caster and the Acclaimed, as we all do now, but I don't really remember this match much.
That's fair. I thought it was all right going fair back enough. And watching it. 17. CM Punk defeats Penta Oscuro once again. We're continuing to rack up the ranking points to get Punk to the top of that there thing, I think. Lots of taunts at the start of this match because it's Penta. And then we get lots of strikes and lots of chops. Punk goes for a GTS, but somehow Penta, and I still don't know how he did this going back and watching it, reverses that into an ankle lock.
He's crazy.
So smooth. Punk then injures his knee once again off a tope this time. Excuse me. And that didn't quite go to plan. So Penta worked it, baby. Like all good professional wrestling heel baby faces do. So much so that when Punk did a Frankensteiner, then tried to do a GTS, but he couldn't because, oh, my knee. Mm-hmm. My knee hurts. Punk was then actually selling knee to the point where people were thinking he was botching because he was going for the big dive and clothesline off the top rope.
Yeah.
Where he springboards himself and he was falling down. He just was it selling or was it botching? I don't know.
Does it matter if you can't tell?
Yeah. Oh, well, maybe that, it worked then.
Yeah. Maybe.
Penta then tries to rip Punk's arm off, which sees Punk reverse that into the Anaconda Vice, and then they're just having a brawl and it's class. CM Punk, it's a GTS for the win. It's lovely.
It's lovely, lovely, lovely.
Somewhere in the middle there, I think. Because it only went 14 minutes, but it was really good all the
same. Yeah, I would agree.
Just too much posturing at the start of these Penta matches for me, you know? Too much of this.
Throw the gloves.
Gloves and all that sort of stuff.
Did the Orange Cassidy catch the sunglasses? No, Danhausen catch Orange Cassidy's sunglasses.
Oh, I can't remember.
Just the other week, Orange Cassidy threw them out the ring because he was against Penta. And then he went, I'll show you this. And Danhausen didn't even move his hand, just went, oh. But then he didn't do it all cool like Roman Reigns when he caught the mic off Brock Lesnar. He then turned around and went like, yeah! Crowd liked it, though.
That's the difference between AEW and WWE.
Yeah.
Then we get CM Punk versus Dustin Rhodes in a match that I forgot happened completely, but going back and watching it, it was absolutely fantastic.
Oh.
Early on, Dustin's the one to hurt his knee, so Punk is all over that because Shades of Grey once again, as he's building towards this match with Hangman. It's like the Kingston and Punk feud once again. Punk going more heely than he was babyfacey. At one point, he smashes Dustin's knee into the ring apron, a hammer home that he's ruthless and he's got lots of aggression. Dustin then fought back and hit a code red for a near fall. Punk then goes back to the knee and then tries a figure four on Dustin, but once again Dustin fights back and hits a massive pile driver of his own. Punk then sells his arm because Dustin had done things to it so he couldn't hit a GTS. Once again, more logical storytelling from CM Punk in this match here. So with that avenue closed and the inability to hit the GTS, he goes for a roll up and picks up the win. The pair embrace afterwards because they are nice men.
I don't remember much of it, but from the sounds of it, it was really good.
Yeah, just another one of those matches. stories. That's what it was. Just like, I'll work your body part, you work mine, I can't use my body part. So
I bet they have so much respect for each other.
Oh, big time, yeah.
I bet Punk really respects
Dustin. They've been in the trenches with each other for years.
They have. I'll put in lovely then, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, would I you think say lovely, so? Yeah, definitely, yeah. Not one of the best lovelies, but just a lovely match. Nice story. 17 minutes, 26 seconds. Dustin defined the laws of physics once again, like he always does. And after this match, Hangman's down to the ring. Just on the ramp, just looking at Punk, because we're building towards Double or Nothing. Continuing on the road towards Double or Nothing, we get Punk defeating John Silver on Dynamite, 8 minutes and 6 seconds.
Oh,
Punk
should have been longer. How can QT Marshall versus CM Punk be longer than John Silver?
Every dog has his day, clearly. But Punk is in Long Island, so he wore some kind of sporting jersey that made the crowd hate him even more.
I think it was like wearing... I think it was a player from
Blue and Orange.
It was the New York Islanders. It was their team, but he was wearing. It's like wearing an Andy Cole shirt in Newcastle after he's already left. I think it was like a player who'd left them. Yeah.
What a bastard. Yeah. Anyway, because obviously I like the fact that Punk had done that. Just when he's in Long Island, he is a heel and just a heel. Like Bret in Canada. Yeah. Another Bret Hart thing. Punk was trying to keep Silver grounded early on, not let him get going and get up ahead of steam, which I love that little tactical thing. Because once Johnny Hungy gets going, there's no stopping him, which eventually he did in this match. And he's been a massive meat man here. Brain Buster, Tornado DDT. Had you think he was going to win? But no, Punk survives. Then Punk boots Silver in the head, gets on the apron, looks at Hangman, who's on commentary for this match, then does a buckshot for the
and
win.
Nails it.
He bloody nails it.
Which he always would.
It just must have been like someone sleeping with Hangman's wife and looking at Hangman while doing so.
But not quite. Well, for this time, yeah. Yeah, this was really, this was a good buckshot.
Yeah. And it was because he did it in Long Island, obviously got a bigger reaction than would have done elsewhere in the country, I would assume. And then Paige comes back down to the ring, gets in Punk's face, and then Punk says, like, whatever it takes, I'll take the title. Then he shakes Hangman's hand, but Hangman flips him off. A short match, but once again, a nice story told with Punk trying to end it early and suppressing all of Hungy's offense. Hungy getting lots of offense in, and then obviously the little story there with Hangman at the end there. I thought it was a good bit of business.
It was a lovely, lovely, lovely bit of business as well.
Yes, I would agree with that. We're flying through this, let me tell you. We're already on to Punk's 20th match in AEW.
Is this where it starts to...
A little one, yeah. AEW World Titles on the line. CM Punk defeats Adam Hangman Page 25 minutes and 40 seconds at Double or Nothing of this very year. Hangman turns everything in the build, obviously, to this match to rather Hangman versus Punk as Hangman trying to save AEW from Punk in his arsehole ways backstage. Yeah, workers' rights. You don't believe in them. You only believe in them when it works for you, you prick. Yeah.
Oh, God. It's just, or it's something just the like decline, that. Isn't it? It's just the decline.
Interestingly, good, because I watched this one in full again. The commentators early on are saying, the story is, the commentators are getting across that Punk can sometimes be an arsehole when he wants to, which could help him win this match. Whereas Hangman is so bloody wholesome. Is he capable of being an arsehole to keep his title and beat the big CM Punk arsehole?
No, he wasn't.
He wasn't, though, was he?
How was this match, watching it back? Because I've only seen this one as it happened, and I imagine it was better in a vacuum than at the end of like a 5-hour AEW.
Oh, it was a lot, yeah. It was once again a big story thing, because we had Punk either botching or selling once again by trying... But then again, he was trying to do all of Hangman's moves, wasn't he? But he wasn't quite doing them, which... It's either botching, it's either selling because of what Hangman did to him, or it's either Punk is trying another man's moves that he can't do because it's another man's moves and that other man is
but
better.
But it could also have been, that could have actually been what was actually happening.
Yeah.
I think he botched at least one of the attempts. And maybe then he thought, I'll botch the second one, or I don't know, it's hard to tell.
Yeah,
then Hangman, he botched one of them, definitely.
Yeah, Hangman does some of Punk's moves too, because this is personal, obviously. Then we get the bit where we go to the outside and Hangman picks up the belt. He's like, oh, this is my title. Oh, this is my title, CM Punk, you're not getting it. Then the referee takes it off Hangman and puts it in the safe zone where both wrestlers couldn't dream of getting their hands on it and using it for the finish of the match. He puts it on the ring apron.
Yeah.
The ref bump then happens, which gives Hangman the chance to use the belt, but he can't do it because he's so bloody wholesome. It's Bret Hart and Roddy Piper from WrestleMania all over again. Punk then reverses the buckshot, then hits a GTS and gets the win. Oh, it was... Obviously, as Jack said, it was at the end of a very long night, but I thought going back and watching it, it wasn't one of Punk's best matches. But I like... If you're going to have Hangman... Because it's hard to look back on Hangman's ring, because Hangman's ring was crap. Let's just say what it was. It was just... by this point, in my eyes, it had turned all into Punk. It was CM Punk's show, and Hangman was the guy holding the title.
The only person I talked to who I think was surprised that Punk won was Andrew... Because he's a cowboy, also a cowboy like Hangman, well, yeah.
So yeah, I can see why they had him lose, and having him lose in this way, I thought was some good character development, because you know, it was the first time he'd been to the top of the mountain, so to speak, and not having that killer instinct, that cerebral assassinness about his person. That's what bit him on the arse. But I think it's not one of the best matches he had in AEW. No. I think it's lovely to you.
Yeah, me too, but it should have been in the best tier. Yeah. The hype made it seem like it would be, but I'll put it in lovely.
But I tell you what, going back and watching it as well, you couldn't tell that these two men like legitimately had some beef, because they just they just had a match, and obviously because Punk was winning, Punk didn't have any issues with it, so Punk was fine with it, because as we know now, Punk only likes things when they benefit him. 21, CM Punk and FTR take on Max Caster and the Ass Boys.
Okay.
This is the match that went 11 minutes and 50 seconds, but also the match where Punk has the entrance with the title for the first time after Double or Nothing. It's got the elevated entrance ramp, which I think they used on the pay-per-view before as well. Mm. He goes to jump off the elevated ramp into the crowd and catches his ankle on the barricade as he lands, and obviously breaks it into smithereens. And he's limping down to the ring from the ramp. I don't think a lot of us caught on to that until... Yeah. The news of the injury came out after this Dynamite went off the air, but it's clear to see that's when it happens, because he's limping down the ramp. The tag teams, unsurprisingly, do tag team things, but with Caster, it's going at it with Punk because he's just sort of the odd man out, because Bowens wasn't fit to take part in this match. Billy Gunn's on the outside, causing distraction, which allows the heels to get out, get on top at that time. Big elbow drop from Punk. He's setting up for the GTS, but Billy gets involved once again. Punk throws Austin Gunn into Billy, which knocks Billy to the floor somehow, because he's a wall, isn't he?
Yeah.
FTR hit the big rig for the win.
All right.
Yeah, just all right.
Yeah, just all right, because the main thing everyone remembers for this match is it's the one where Punk injured himself in the entrance.
And he didn't do too much in the match, which I guess is just down to being rugged. Punk then cuts a promo after the match saying he's never done drugs, but standing here with the title, having won, with the crowd going wild, it's what it must feel to be like on them.
Weird. Weird decision.
And then Tanahashi comes out. We're set up for Punk and Tanahashi at Forbidden Door. I thought it was just, as Jack said, it was just an all right match. Virgin, lovely. It was okay. Then we get on to match number 22. Obviously, Punk is written out for a long time because of that injury there. Tanahashi goes on to face Moxley for the interim title at Forbidden Door. Moxley comes out of that with the title. So we have the actual champion Punk versus the interim champion Moxley, where Moxley defeats Punk in 3 minutes and 10 seconds. Cage match had it written down as, but
it felt shorter.
It felt a lot shorter than that, yeah. It was halfway through the show, which obviously didn't feel right at the time.
He got his ass kicked. JR was loving it.
Yeah, everyone was saying the story is, Punk came back too soon. He just wanted to put a show on for the fans who would be missing him so much. But then Jim Ross said, now he got his ass kicked.
He got his ass whooped. The warning signs went off for me when this was not the main event of the show. Yeah. And I was like, what have they got in store for us here? My issue isn't with Punk necessarily losing, maybe, because it was a genuine shock. Everyone just assumed Moxley would lose and make way for Punk and everything. And it was probably quite a cool idea that he didn't do that, but the way it happened was very strange to me.
I mean,
why did they hype it up so much on TV? Then world title match, it'll go as long as it needs to.
Oh yeah, because it was
a
standard match, wasn't there? With Buddy Matthews afterwards, wasn't there? The bigging up of obviously it's interim title versus world title, it's going to be a big thing, so they had to big it up, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just going back to Punk, man. He got everything he wanted out of this angle. He got the soul-crushing defeat. Yes, they shoehorned like several weeks or maybe months of storytelling and like getting convinced he can go for the big once again into one segment with the dog-faced grandma himself, Ace Steel. So that was weird. But ultimately, Punk got the big crushing defeat here. Had to be convinced to, like, you know, fight for his stuff and whatnot. He did
for
that.
For Chicago.
Then he came back and he won the title. Yeah, he still wasn't happy.
So
he got everything he wanted.
I know. And I think looking at it, I was so confused that week. Like, why on earth have they done this? Even if it does go how we suspect and Punk gets his win back at the pay-per-view, which he did, why would they do it this way? And looking back now, actually, I've got a slightly more favourable view of it, because I think we're all looking at it from too much of a Punk-centric point of view.
Yeah.
But it kind of made Moxley look still a bit strong.
Yeah.
Even though he was ultimately going to lose the belt, it showed that he's a ruthless killer.
A killer, yeah. Because in the match itself, Punk goes for a big kick at the start of the match, but the pivoting foot is what goes, and Punk sells the pivoting foot because all the weight was on it and it hadn't healed and whatnot. Mox then just jumps on him and it just goes going for a while. Then two Death Riders later and it's over. Obviously, the narrative was that Punk came back too early. I
think it's I would have been screaming for it to be in the bin if we'd done this tier list a few weeks ago, but now I think bearable.
I think bearable as well.
Yeah. Really convoluted and weird, but bearable.
It's still why did they have to do it then? Why did they have to do them one match and then the second match? Why couldn't it just have been the second
match? I guess to keep Moxley a bit strong, which is why I look on it a little bit more favourably now.
Because it was Mox's idea, as we read in the dirty sheets and whatnot, to have this match happen on Dynamite. Why did they have to do this one and then not just wait for the pay-per-view? Because it was initially announced just for the pay-per-view, wasn't it?
Yes.
Then we get to the pay-per-view.
But then if it was just a pay-per-view match, it's just Moxley losing. So yeah, I kind of get it.
It is weird. But then again, Punk got everything he wanted. He was an arsehole. All Out 2022, the world title's on the line, Moxley defending against CM Punk. The match goes 19 minutes
honestly,
and 57 seconds.
After what happened after this show, I really don't remember this match very well at all.
I don't think it was that good, really. A nice tease early on with Punk going for the GTS, trying to end the match, you know, as quick as the first one did. I like that little story. Plot point.
Okay.
But obviously Mox gets out of it. Then Punk just starts pissing blood. It's a really back and forth thing where it looked like both men were going to win. We're getting chokes, we're getting strikes, we're getting all sorts. It's just a big, massive brawl. That bit was good. Lots of kickouts, which Matthew of Botchamania fame would hate, I assume. But the biggest one coming after a death rider, you think it's over, but no. Punk gets out of it. Mox is then laying it in with the big strikes and whatnot. But then there's then he goes for a GTS, does Punk.
Yeah.
And Moxley threatens to do the old Cena thing of falling through, or the Derby thing, as it might be known now, falling through the ropes to the floor. But no, he bounces back and just sort of collapses on the top of Punk. And then he goes, yeah, I've got the wills of Chicago pulsating through my veins. I must fight and do this, even though I can't do it physically. The will of the people will get me through. And he just hits another GTS, and then that's how the match ends.
So I enjoyed it more than the Hangman one.
I think I did as well. I had to remind myself there. It was brutal. It was more like the Kingston match.
Yes. I liked the tease at the start that they were going to do a reversal of the squash on TV as
Maybe
well.
Maybe I've been a bit harsh saying it wasn't that good.
I think it's definitely lovely, but I would hesitate to put it in the best.
Yeah, I would put it in the lovely as well.
And then it just got totally overshadowed by everything that happened after.
Yeah. MJF returned, by the way, just in case you forgot.
I didn't remember that happened as well, yeah.
And then we had the press conference. So yeah, there we go. That is every single CM Punk AEW match that he's had so far in a tier list.
Yeah.
We'll just have to work out which has been the best one so far. The pictures are very small. Is the match against Darby Allin at All Out 21 better than the match against...
That's the one against Eddie Kingston.
Eddie Kingston?
No, I preferred the one against Eddie Kingston just.
Is the one against Robert Fish?
MJF. That is the first one against MJF.
Yeah, the first one against MJF, is that better than the one against Kingston?
I preferred it to the Derby one just. Oh, did I? Yeah, but not more than the Kingston one.
Kingston or Dog Collar?
Dog Collar.
Ooh. Mm. Oh, then we have Dog Collar or Dax Harwood.
I think that's the my final order of that.
Ooh,
I
would put the Kingston on top of the Dog Collar.
It's really close, but I think the Dog Collar was like Backlash 2001. Yeah. Storytelling at its most exciting.
Yeah, I guess it was the build to the long build to the match, which set it apart maybe. But there we go. That is all of CM Punk's AEW matches in a tier. My God, I should have necked a coffee before I came in here. Tell us how wrong we are in the comments down below. Tell us how much we are wrong for loving CM
Punk.
They
all suck.
Yeah.
Fair, Ross, I think you've been really complimentary of CM Punk, who you despise.
As I said, it's just recently with all the stuff that's gone on. He got everything he wanted from that world title angle with Moxley, yet he's still unhappy.
But
why?
It's so conflicting because a lot of us don't agree with, I'm finding it really hard to defend him, but...
Go on, put your neck on the line.
No, I can't. But I will say in ring, he's still got it.
He has still got it. Because as we saw there, early on, it was going as good as it possibly could have. And then obviously the backstage stuff has just made it go a bit off the tracks as we're getting towards October of 2022. Will he come back? Is he back by the time this video goes live? I've got no idea. You'll have to let us know. Yeah, so do you reckon he'll come back? Go on, if I was going to shoot you in the face with a gun. Because we don't know if he's even been suspended
yet.
It's
so hard to tell.
We know the Bucks and Omega have been suspended as we're sat here now, but Ace Steel and Punk, we don't know.
You know what? I will hesitantly say that he won't.
I'll say that he will, just for the crack.
Fair enough.
Do you think he'll come back? Let us know in the comments down below. Tell us how wrong we are for putting the Dog Collar match at the top there. I have been Gary YouTube, once again doing some Gary YouTubing, joined by another Gary YouTube. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.